Uniting Native Communities and Philanthropy. From SDPB, today is Thursday, October 10th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, an upcoming gathering in Rapid City offers insight, education, and networking to connect donor organizations with Native community leaders. We spend the hour in conversation with Tashina Banks Rama, Lori Poirier, Nick Hernandez, and Valeria Big Eagle. We'll talk about food systems, art making, Lakota language revitalization, and moving funding from people who want to give to people who know how to leverage funds to reimagine systems. People know what they need. We gather together to listen. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Each year, billions of dollars in philanthropic donations flow from individuals and donor organizations and into the hands of people who use those funds to change lives, reimagine systems, and rebuild sustainable collaborations. But only a tiny percentage is leveraged in what is known as Indian Country. Today, we are spending the hour with Tashina Banks Rama, Tashina Wanbliwi, Lori Poirier, Nick Hernandez, and Valeria Big Eagle. You'll meet each in turn in a moment. The public is invited to a Pathways to Partnership, Uniting Native Communities and Philanthropy Gathering. The date is Wednesday, October 16th at the Journey Museum in Rapid City from 9 a.m. to 12:30 local time. The event is sponsored by Porticus in North America. Nick Tilson of NDN Collective is keynote speaker. Let's begin introductions.
Abetiwashte, Tashina Wanbliwi, Amachia Bikshto, Tanyanya Hipi. I'm really glad to see you or be with you all today. That is, my Lakota name is Tashina Wanbliwi, and it's actually the only name I have. It translates to Eagle Shawl Woman. It was given to me when I was 8 months old as a baby. So I'm happy to be here today to talk a little bit about the summit that we are going to be hosting. It's called Pathways to Partnership. And really, it's an opportunity for community organizations that are indigenously led, but also community organizations that are serving our constituents and our community members and our relatives here in South Dakota and in the region, because in Indian Country, we don't necessarily operate just off of state boundaries, but regional territories. This gathering will be open to community organizations in the region. The purpose of it really is to not just to connect with each other, but we want to show that when you partner with organizations and you have a shared goal, that really what happens in supporting each other is kind of multiplies the effect of that. The multiplier effect of that has been really extraordinary. So the Porticus Foundation granted four organizations. They granted us each, and we're all very different sectors. While we're serving Indian Country, we have very different sectors. And so what we did, though, on our own, we were not asked to do this, but on our own, the four organizations, we started talking to each other. We started meeting with one another, and we started asking each other, like, how can we support you, and how can we share resources and resources like professional development or office space or social media, lifting each other up. And so this regional partnership kind of naturally and organically came about. And so the summit really is to highlight that when you partner with each other, multiplier effect comes into play, and really some extraordinary things have come about. So that's what the gathering is about. It's about trying to create more partnerships, informal, connecting with each other, which hopefully lead to kind of regional partnerships where we can continue to move into this abundance mentality and abundance mindset rather than scarcity. And like, we're all fighting for the less than 1% of philanthropic dollars that come to Indian country. How can we make those dollars work for all of us? So that's the goal of the event, which is Wednesday, October 16th, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Journey Museum. And it will be open to the public.
Lori Puryear, would you like to introduce our listeners to the work that that you're doing? A little bit about yourself, please.
Petiwashte mitakiapi makasi tomni omani we, Lori, or imachiapi kishto. I'm Oglala Lakota, and I've been working at First Peoples Fund in Rapid City since 1999. And prior to that, I worked with the Indigenous Women's Network, which was a national and international women's movement organization, and then First Nations Development Institute, which is one of the earlier leading Native philanthropies in Indian country. And so I'm honored to be a part of this conversation today and join the Pathways to Partnership group gathering here on, I think Tashina said, October 16th. And grateful to share what Tashina was talking about in terms of abundance. And I think, you know, when you work in the field in the area of, you know, the arts and social justice and intersection with community development, and then just coming from, you know, Indian community in the Great Plains, is that there's not a lot of resources. You know, and when I started this work, it was really a lot of federal dollars coming into Indian countries just because of the trust relationship, government to government relationship with the tribes. And so there weren't a lot of folks, you know, in the field of this thing we call philanthropy and giving to Indian country. And so I was able to learn from, you know, some of the most amazing, brilliant women in Indian country and, you know, in my earlier career. And so, yeah, I'm here happy to share that. I'm enrolled on Pine Ridge and partnered with many of these organizations and serve as supporters and mentors and, you know, whatever ways I can in getting more resources to our tribal communities.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Lamaya.
Nick Hernandez, welcome back. Remind listeners who you are and the kind of work that you do around food and food sovereignty.
Yeah. Betuwashte, Kiemani, Machiopi, Chontewashte, Nape, Chuzabalo. Well, good afternoon, good morning. My name is Nick Hernandez. I'm the president and CEO of Mokoche Agriculture Development. We are a grassroots, place-based, nonprofit organization based on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. We are focusing on the development of indigenous agriculture and food systems within our community homelands, but also within the entire region. And when I want to talk about, you know, food systems, you know, it could be anything from, you know, raising of chickens that we do to processing of buffalo to creating partnerships with various producers, and then everything stemming from, you know, arts, culture, language, because our focus is on food systems. You know, there's nothing real specific that we work with, and we're talking about actual the rebuilding and the regeneration of the Ocheti Shakoi as a nation, but also the food systems that helped us to thrive for millennia. And so our work is within, you know, the political understanding of our nation, but also the foundational understanding of food systems, you know, that which connects us back to the land, and that's what nourishes us from the land. And so our work, you know, we have 5 key initiatives that we operate under. We want to develop the first indigenous food hub within the Upper Great Plains. We're rooted in a lot of work of building a 45,000 square foot multi-purpose community food hub, focusing on operating a education and production farm is one of our initiatives, so that we can educate and train the next generation of workforce around food production. Third one is our Food Systems Institute. So that is the foundation of community education towards workforce development in the many realms of culture, foods, education, hands-on opportunities. And our fourth one is the Hemp Development Initiative. It's still in our infancy, but it's utilizing the crop for its byproducts. And we want to utilize it in many forms. Supposedly there's 10,000 ways of utilizing hemp for its industrial properties. And we want to be able to concentrate on a few of those and be able to utilize them as a food source, a heating source, and an energy element. And then our last initiative is what we call the Ocheti Shakwe Food Systems Alliance. And there is kind of stems a lot of the networking and the partnership in the region, stemming from what Tashina was identifying as the multiplier effect, right? Understanding, you know, social, cultural, economics of the multiplier effect. And so having that understanding of what does that truly mean within our community, but coming from a historical sense of policy and then into a modern sense of development for the social and economic development that we need within our communities and then spread across the region. So yeah, that's a little bit about the organization and maybe a 60-second pitch. But yeah, happy to be here, especially amongst relatives that I hold in high esteem and high honor for the collective work that they've been doing for a long time. So I'm happy to be here today.
Yeah, thank you for that. I hope we can circle back to that idea of sort of intentional training places, these hubs where people can come and learn, you know, together in community. I love that. So Valeria Big Eagle, welcome. Kindly introduce yourself and your work a little bit, please.
Ompetuashte relatives. My name is Valeria Big Eagle. I'm a Hunktuan Dakota Nakota. And my Dakota name is Wakama Chekewi, which is Sacred Prayer Woman. And I always introduce myself in that way because I know that I am where I am because of my culture, my language, my life ways. And so currently I am the Director of Strategic Partnerships for Indian Collective. And we do a lot of different things, but I think the one of the biggest things that we do here at Indian Collective is serving as a place where we really focus on resource rematriation, because our mission is to build the collective power of Indigenous peoples, communities, and nations. And our Indigenous communities and people, they know what they need. And so for looking at philanthropy and the dollars is really investing into our communities in unrestricted ways, right? Unrestricted funding, because they really do know what they need. And funders and foundations understanding that. So here, just within the work that we're doing is, of course, we defend, develop, and decolonize, and understanding that defending our communities, our Indigenous communities and their voices and their resources, their land and water, we just have to be very innovative about our approach to that sustainability and that fundraising and what that looks like. Some of the Western systems and foundations, they need to decolonize their thinking and really looking at even their Indigenous representation on the foundation boards that they have. They need to ensure that there's an Indigenous voice that's part of those foundation boards. And that's important, you know, and part of that is just the advocacy that we do here. And I know Nick Tilson, our founder and CEO, he's the keynote speaker for next Wednesday's event. But that's part of that work, is just serving as an advocate and connecting those resources to the Indigenous communities and foundations. And so that's kind of what we do here, is just rematriation. We serve as that hub and providing a place where Indigenous organizations can apply for grants. And so we have, over the past several years, we have given over $100 million into our grant making through our Indian Foundation. And that has gone out to Indigenous organizations, nonprofits, also Native Nations, because again, they know what they need to do. And so unrestricted funding to them to support that work. And then with the Indian Fund, we also have a lending program. So we have given out over $10 million of funding through our lending program. And again, that could be to entrepreneurs to support them. We have several impact stories on our website. But again, that's a different way. That's another arm that we do support Indigenous orgs, Indigenous people, and that sustainability is that lending fund too. We also have provided $10 million in local place-based development projects and community development. And that includes, you know, land back initiatives, those types of things, but also $5 million in conservative projects. And so we do a lot of work in climate, land, water. You know, that's what we focus on here at Endian Collective. And I know that Nick, he'll give more spiel of what that looks like, because it's a lot of different work. Our CEO founder has been doing this work for a really long time. And it's such a great honor to be able to be here today with all of you. I'm just new to my position here at Endian Collective, but my heart is for the people. And I know that everything that we all do here, it's for our people, for future generations. And we just need funders and foundations to understand that our people know what they need, to trust us and to start looking at innovative ways and unrestricted ways to be able to support us and our people for our future generations to come.
Thank you for that. A few things come to mind, this idea of abundance and people working together, the connections and the collaborations, especially when philanthropic dollars come, as you said, you know, for different organizations and the natural partnerships that then build from that, it amplifies the impact of those dollars. Lori, would you start there with the idea of such a small percentage of these philanthropic dollars are going to come to Indian Country? What are some of the ways to speak to philanthropic organizations to say you could do so much more and the impact would be so great if what? How do you speak to some of those large funders about their responsibilities and their opportunities?
Thank you, folks, for sharing. And yeah, that's kind of a big question, because I think it's a long haul, you know, in terms of, I guess I would say first and foremost, it's really about just like in our home communities of, you know, building relationships and, you know, within community. I think within philanthropy and within that sector, it's also important to, you know, really just be a good relative and get to know folks. And oftentimes that world is so far away. I mean, in the older days, I used to say, well, you know, because it was either far east or far west. And I'd be like, this is like a goal post and we're in the middle. This is Indian Country. And hello, you know, we're out here. But, you know, I think working with a lot of just really sharp and brilliant women over my years, too, is just at a young age. I think it was in my 20s. Just I think my first meeting was at the Ford Foundation, you know, and I was with two Native women, Sherry Salway Black and, you know, Rebecca Adamson. And it takes a lot of really a lot of education. I mean, folks are doing land acknowledgement now everywhere and, you know, kind of patting himself on the back for that. And, but it's, you know, that's not the answer, because I've been in many Zoom calls where there'll be a land acknowledgement. And if I was the only Native person in there, there would be no more conversation about land, anything, you know, really about Indigenous anything. So, and I think Tashina mentioned, you know, it's 1%. I think when Native Americans and philanthropy started in the sector, there was like one or two folks, you know, in philanthropy, you know, and I think it was Kellogg Foundation and a couple others, but now there's many, many more in the field. I think there's 28 now in community foundations and philanthropy foundations, and maybe 12 or so on the board of directors. I serve on the board of directors of the Jerome Foundation, and you know, just being in that organization with other folks from Black and Indigenous, other communities, you know, we've seen the grant-making shift. You know, we are looking at natural resources that the foundation sits on in the Northwest Coast, because many of the philanthropies plowed over our lands to get, you know, their wealth. And so now they're, in particular in the Twin City areas, many of them have changed their way of giving. So I feel like we've come a long way and folks are more educated. And I think NAP's last data was around 0.5%. And that was probably a short period, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. So we haven't moved much on, you know, that spectrum of giving. But a lot of folks, you know, I love it when I get to travel now and I look around and see all my colleague friends from home, you know, all doing the good work out there. And we spend a lot of time on the road just to bring, you know, resources home. And Andean Collective, you know, really changed the trajectory of the field in 3.5 short years. You know, I think just a last time I saw Nick, it was 80 million, now it's 100 million. So, you know, right on to Andean Collective for doing the good work. You know, I've always been in one particular sector, which is arts and culture and community development. You know, within philanthropy and the larger foundations, they have so many departments that oftentimes arts and culture and arts and social justice will represent about the same amount of total giving for arts and social justice, you know, is similar to Indian country. So if you take that 0.5% in Indian country, you take that 0.4% in arts and social justice, you know, it's not a lot of resources. Philanthropies are, in the case of arts and social justice, are just arts. You know, they're still giving to the larger institutions, you know, where they feel safe and, you know, giving their resources there. So I feel like maybe a decade ago, we were at 0.2%. Now, hopefully, it's going to increase. But you can see the landscape shifting, you know, Nick, you know, really being instrumental at, you know, working at Thunder Valley. And just, you know, it's really about, you know, supporting each other. We've done so many trips, you know, down there to Pine Ridge and Cheyenne River and other communities, you know, my last 20 years plus, you know, and just bringing folks to home to meet folks, you know, and on Pine Ridge now, that's why we have the Oglala Lakota Art Space. You know, if someone told me that when I started this work, we would be having the Oglala Lakota Arts, well, the Rolling Res Arts Bus first, which was the Bush Prize and Art Place Award, which was the idea of Don Montalo and Marty Redbear and others, you know, said they used to work with the Arts Council, I think, on some bus. And, you know, so we thought, okay, we're going to, Don kind of described it as an ice cream looking truck. I said, oh my gosh, we better deck that thing out if we get one of those, because I don't want it to look like an ice cream truck, because they used to go to North Dakota and South Dakota and share their work. And so, you know, now Don's come a long way. He's, you know, been a part of First Peoples Fund, Donald Motzlow and others. So I think it's just, for me, just feels like, you know, concentric circles of supporting each other, you know, and the good work and being able to share that across our communities. And especially, I really believe that tradition keepers, culture bearers, you know, they're at the center of our work at First Peoples Fund. And, you know, they're the ones who are, you know, restoring, they're the ones that have seen so much extracted and taken from our communities. And they're the last language speakers, you know, the ones continuing with the ceremonies. Their tribe might have been terminated in the Northwest Coast, and it was the culture bearers or the tradition keepers, you know, that fought hard to, you know, make sure that the tribe was able to restore and reclaim in the Siletz community, as one example, and Menominee Nation, you know, it was those folks along with the activists in our communities. So that's where the heart of, you know, our work has been at First Peoples Fund. And, you know, we're by no means near Indian, you know, and our being able to redistribute the wealth into our communities. But just in terms of artists and culture bearers and community development, we started off with the lending, you know, component at First Peoples Fund. Eloise Cabal, you know, was a dear friend of ours and, you know, one of the board members of the Blackfeet, our First Peoples Fund, was one of the founders of the First National Bank on Blackfeet. And then I had been working at First Nations, and we started the first microloan fund on Pine Ridge, which was the Lakota Funds. And so that model for us around financial education, financial literacy, and lending was a component of First Peoples Fund's work in terms of, you know, really rebuilding our reservations economy. And I know that when we did our research with the Creative Economy Report, I think the income of our artists coming in, you know, was around $7,000. And today we can see that multiplier effect or that ripple effect of our artists. You know, we have our artists are receiving the National Endowment Heritage Award, the United States Artists Award. Three of our artists have received the MacArthur Genius Award, you know, so we see those good things happening as, you know, working together.
Is that another piece of education that you've found that you have to explain that art is not fragmented from other parts of life? It's not necessarily over here in this corner. It is life.
Well, that's been like a huge educational part of, you know, our work, you know, from even when I was still at First Nations, is that, as Cecilia Fire Thunder and others say, every community I go to, you know, we don't have a word for art in any of our language because it encompasses all of those things. You know, it's that way of life and, you know, that teaching. And I know, you know, Cecilia and most of them will say we make things with our hands. You can go into any tribal community in the house and after dinner, you know, people move the clean the table off and people are doing stuff with their hands, getting ready for powwow or, you know, making art. And I mean, even Deani has the White Hawk has a space in the Twin Cities now. And like she has this whole extended family, you know, that contributes to her business there. It's hard to not get caught up in the latest buzzwords or language, you know, and as for Native peoples, it's really not about any of those things, you know. And oftentimes when you're writing your proposals, you can see how people's narrative shifts to follow what, you know, philanthropy's saying or, you know, doing. That doesn't work either. Hmm.
Valeria, can you provide more context to this idea of where money was derived?
You know, Northwest Area Foundation is an example. You know, their wealth was off of the back of, you know, right, plowing through on the railroad, you know, all the way to the Northwest coast. And, you know, as a philanthropy today, you know, they have had Native people on their board. So it shifted it. Eloise Cabell was one of the first ones on their board of directors and, you know, others since then. I think the last I knew it was 40% of all their giving, and maybe it's 60% now goes to Indian country, right? Because mm-hmm. of that, you know, that acknowledgement. So that's one example. Jerome Foundation's another, you know, of the which the board I sit on now, you know, there's so many, like they have a lot of, you know, timber wealth, that family. So yeah, so those philanthropies ideally are, you know, some of them are doing the right thing today as a result
right. of. And I think what you're speaking to is just recognizing maybe the ways that they have benefited from Indigenous people or lands, you know, all of those things, and then being good relatives. And that's one of the things that's really, it takes some time. Again, relationship building is really important. Like you talked about, Lori, you know, having those relationships, having that understanding, and then wanting to rectify the wrongdoings of what happened. You know, having those relationships really closely, they understand in which the innovative ways, it may not be even through their foundation. That's why we see a lot of foundation and funders wanting to give to Indian Collective, because we make it, you know, that streaming arm to be able to give to the Indigenous people unrestricted. Because a lot of times too, with the constraints of traditional foundations, you could see how they start asking questions about, well, what is culture? What does this mean? How do you measure the metrics or the outcomes of you? How do you identify culture or language or artistry, any of that? And that becomes too constrained in the box of what they're defining in Western society. And so here at NDM, again, it's we know that's for us and by us. And so the Indigenous organizations, they know what they need. They define their needs. And we find the ways to support them throughout our ecosystem, whether that be through the foundation, the fund, you know, all of that. And so there are a lot of ways that regular and, you know, Western society, again, foundations, like you talked about Northwest Area Foundation, and like the Bush Foundation is really good about that, ensuring that there's an Indigenous voice, that they have people that understand our needs as well. But I think that's one of the ways that regular foundations can really be more forthcoming and innovative in their approach to, again, decolonize their mindsets and want to give to Indigenous organizations, Native nations, and people so that we can truly make generational change happen for our communities under our definitions, not theirs.
Which makes me curious, Dr. Big Eagle, about in education and with children, there's a huge gap in education through the boarding school era where so much is lost. It would seem to me that somebody might need a reminder that they do in fact know what they need. But do you have times when someone says, I don't want to mess this up, and they're coming at it from a framework that you need to sort of reposition, that the support you're offering them is to help them figure out how they were taught in a way that might not be traditional and certainly not useful today?
You know, when you have folks that are wanting to, you know, rectify their wrongdoings or what have you, they do have that open mind and open heart. And so it feels like they're able to perceive that. And sometimes you do have relatives who are just like, nope, that didn't happen, right? But just remembering that everything that we're doing as Indigenous people, it's for our future generations to come. In the education system right now, and we even see that everything that they're doing down to Makbia Luta, the work and recognizing that there's this healing that's taking place. This is also part of that healing when it comes to philanthropy and investing into Indigenous organizations. Again, it's acknowledging that we do have our culture, we do have our life ways, we do have our ways of knowing and being, we do have our regenerative ways of even when it comes to agriculture, those types of things, and just understanding that we know what we need. And so that's that, when I constantly say that, it's like our people know what we need. It's a constant education, but the forefront is always our children. And with our children, then that reconnection to identity and really grounding them in who they are, where they come from, so that they can advocate in their community, in the education system, all of these things. So, but it all goes hand in hand. It really does. And it's all part of this generational healing that's taking place within the Ocheti Shakoi and beyond.
Nick, there's that word regenerative.
No, I'm just blown away by all of the history and the understanding that everybody is sharing here today. It comes down to in the Western, you know, context of words, right? It's a reconnection back to true understanding, right? We label everything with these words, right? With words, with standards, right? With learning, but we have totally separated ourselves from culture, from society, from living off of the land, which is the reason why we have pandemics. It's the reason why we have diseases and, you know, all these things that create dysfunction, right? When we talk about the use of terminology and the use of identifying things, we're missing the actual ceremony of relationship, the ceremony of creating relationship, not only with us as humans, but in the reality of ourselves into this natural world. And so I'm always blown away when we utilize all of the Western terminology and the Western understandings, because we have to, truth, we're dumbing it down for the general population to understand. But what we're truly trying to do is rebuild, regenerate, right? Recreate systems of thoughts and processes and designs for what we truly need as human beings, right? Living in this world, because all of that could just be taken away, right? And we're down to living off the land and reconnecting, but that's what we truly want to do. And we see the truth within the things that we value, within the ceremonies that we value. And that's everything from the creation of food to the creation of art, you know, to the use of language, because those all have origins, those all have stories. For us to create that ability to create those things is what we were trying to do. And especially during the times, you know, of modern times that are still real to us, of being separated from those things. Our arts and culture, we were separated. We just got back, right? The legal connection of it in the 70s, our food systems we're still separated from. And so we're working hard to not only understand what a food system is, but those connections to land that have been relatively separated from us for over 200 years. And so when I think of all these things that, you know, relatives are speaking about, we're still living in a time that we are trying to build ourselves up, because for far too long, you know, it has been led for us. You know, it has been handed out for us to say, hey, this is what you guys need, right? But it never actually changed anything. And so we're moving from a process of programming to now a process of developing systems for what we truly need. And those systems being led by us as the community, right? And then creating or decolonizing and changing and transforming is what we need to do, because it's more adaptive to our way of not only living, but of understanding what our culture, what our society is, what our way of life, what our connection to all this work really means. I mean, just to add to the important work of supporting, right? The important work of supporting everything that we do, because what we also are not doing is coming from a place of siloness, coming from a place of just developing one thing. Our way of life and our way of living has many, many, many roots and many forms of diversification. And so we take that concept in how we not only fundraise money, but how we as community members, we as employees of organizations, and we as just people have to come from those ways of involvement in life and in living. And so, you know, we want to change the way the thoughts, the ideas, the processes, and the systems that benefit our community in a more collective and shared way of understanding, because that is the framework of nation building. That is the framework of developing community. That is the framework of being a good relative, I should say.
Yeah. Tashina, as we get to the final part of our hour together, I'm wondering if you had a question or a thought that you wanted to ask somebody else here in the room with us. Would you like to co-host a little bit here?
Yeah, I would love to. I am so grateful for this conversation. You know, to have Lori Puyer on this call, really, for me, I mean, I've known Lori. I mean, I won't tell you the full story because we don't have time, but let me just say I'm here in this world because of Duane Puyer, who is Lori's dad, and rest in peace, Lexi Duane, but he was a very important part of my birth story. To be continued. Ask me another time and I'll tell you all in person. But let me just say, it means a lot to me because Lori Puyer was, you know, at Makapia Luta here. I mean, this organization, we are working really hard. We are to be an indigenously led organization. Historically, we have not been indigenously led organization, and we are still not today, to be honest with you. We have a board of directors that is 30% Native, and we are trying to get that to be over 50% so that at the board level that we are an indigenously led organization, you know, and that is something that's happening at the board level, right? So they are internally trying to replace themselves so that this organization is led by community members, Oglala members who are from the community, because it's us who live here and will live here, and our children and grandchildren will live here. But I want to say just that Lori coming to visit Makapia Luta over these last 15, 20 years as First Peoples Fund president, she would bring people here. She would bring Ford Foundation here. She would bring art space here. She would bring, I mean, anytime Lori had funders, she was bringing them here to visit us and highlight the work we were doing. And then she would take them out to Thunder Valley, or she was taking them out to the college. And so I learned by example from my Moshke, from, you know, watching her have this abundance mindset. And I don't think she was necessarily using that word in those times, but she was saying, hey, you know, hey, Ford Foundation, you should really be looking at the Heritage Center because they're serving all of these artists here and they're all from the community. And so she was making those connections years and years and years ago. And I've always felt that abundance feeling from First Peoples Fund. It never was like, hey, I got mine, you know, do you got yours? It was not like that. It was like, I got mine and I'll share. You know, and here's how we, let me introduce you. And then what you do with that introduction is up to you. I mean, but you know, here in Pine Ridge, which is where we are based, you know, if you pick a time, pick a time that we've been colonized, I don't know, let's say 1868 when the signing of the treaty, that's 160 years ago. So for 160 years, we have been systematically programmed to be colonized in our thinking and to be siloed in our thinking. And so now we have to decolonize that kind of thinking away from those silos that Nick and Valeria, Dr. Big Eagle and Lori are talking about. The organizations that are on this call today are organizations that are deconstructing those systems that have created the framework that have been holding us down, holding us back, keeping us from speaking our own language. We're speaking English right now. Lakota wo unglakapi. We should be speaking to each other in Lakota, but we're not because we are so colonized. And so we have to reframe and reconstruct these systems so that we are reclaiming agricultural systems, educational systems, policy, government, the art systems in which those forums are created for artists. You know, one of the things that this partnership has allowed for us is to come together and work together in these new systems that are being created by the people on this phone call and the people that we all work with. And so working together and creating that mindset and that abundance has allowed us then move into the next phase of decolonizing, which is to work together, pray together, support, share each other's resources. And so I'm really honored and happy to be a part of this phone call. So I guess all of that to say that in the sense of pathways to partnership and abundance thinking, and I would open this up to everybody on the phone call, what are some of the biggest partnerships or collaborations, opportunities ahead of us that maybe we are not seeing, you know, or that your organizations are working on right now, collaborations that really could impact us regionally in other ways for us to become involved and to support you all. So how can Makpia Luta support Indian Collective or to support Makoche or First Peoples Fund or South Dakota Public Broadcasting? How can we do that? Can we offer language classes? We invite you to join us and learn on your language journey. You know, so things like that. I guess I would put that out there. What are opportunities for us to support each other?
I guess I can go. I would just say, you know, to continue to be a good relative, I will also say that my teacher is Tashina's daughter. I started the language during COVID, the Lakota language, and, you know, all the young folks, you know, are my teachers. I get my butt kicked every time I go to class every evening, but I still go. But, you know, we're all relearning the language too. You know, we're taking that time and that commitment, and it's because of the younger generation, you know, that are inspiring us, you know. And I was just telling one of the young women from Hawaii this morning, that's a First Peoples Funds fellow and India Collective Radical Imagination fellow. You know, she's using her resources for healing, you know, the women in Hawaii. And I said, you know, that's so wonderful because your generation is focusing on, you know, really how to take care of yourself. And my daughter thinks the same way, you know, where I learned from the aunties and, you know, the clan mothers and others that really you were always available and responsive and you sat and listened for hours and hours and, you know, really took their lead. And so we've been working really hard for a really long time and, you know, just so we can see the changes in our communities, you know. And we see those, you know, generation of women that that generation, they remember what it was like to wake up in the morning and hear your grandmother speaking, your grandfather speaking. And I remember in my household, one of my aunties, who's elderly and has since passed on, said they remember in the house when they would come back from Makbialuta, which was Holy Rosary Mission, they would hear French and Lakota in the house, but they were only told to speak English. And so in every other country around the world, you know, you can meet any international student and they know 3-4 languages. And why do we have to sit here in America and just only speak English? You know, so I just really uplift all of the younger women and young folks that know the language, they're singing the songs. It all starts for all of us in the ceremonies. You know, my family comes from down around Thunder Valley and Porcupine, and that's how I learn. You know, my grandmother was, both my grandmothers are fluent in the language, but they went to boarding school. You know, we all have that boarding school, you know, story, because our parents and our grandparents went through that. And so for us, we want a different way for our children. And that's what we're seeing now. And that's what I think, that's the abundance. You know, I see it in interviewing the Culture Bearers of First Peoples Fund now, where I mentioned early on the tribe that was terminated. And Nick was talking about when the time period of this Indian Religious Freedom Act, you know, we couldn't sing our songs and dance our songs and speak our language. And now we can't, you know, we do. And it was those folks that we learned from that taught us that it was their parents that were still practicing those songs and ceremonies. And now it's just natural, you know. And in the Siletch tribe I mentioned earlier, there's over 100 young people that are dancing and singing in their plank house, their ceremony house. You know, and Bud Lane, the vice chair of that tribe, a Community Spirit Award honoree of First Peoples Fund, said they don't have that memory that we have. They take this for granted now, because this is the way of life they know. And that's what I want for my grandchildren. Right now I have one. So thank you. I'll pass it over to Nick or Valeria.
I mean, as far as, you know, as far as support, you know, we have a lot of amazing leadership that are helping to, you know, change our community, you know, develop it, create space to be able to come together and share, you know, traditions and history and culture and food. And so being supportive of all those opportunities that are excellent is probably what I really want to say. But also, you know, being able to create space so that people can be able to come together, be able to learn from each other, because it does come down to history, right? Towards the separations of what we already talked about, but now we're changing the ways of being able to reconnect back to ourselves, and not relying, in truth, you know, not relying on the outside to create that change for us. And outside, you know, outside of the borders, the res borders are, you know, we have the ideas, we have the innovations, you know, we have the designs, and we're developing the spaces to be able to do that. If it is in the form of what we addressed and talked about, arts and culture and language and food, because some of our focuses too are our passions, right? They're not things that we do get paid. They're things that we're very passionate about, and so our support is rallying. Our support is, you know, being present. Our support is finding new ways to rebuild the systems that we need within our community. And so so that's kind of where we're going, you know, for us, with the five initiatives that we have: building place and space, developing our own education around food and food systems, rebuilding the alliance that is the Ocheti Shakoi, that is the actual true nation, and then working on opportunities that haven't been in existence for over 2 years, creating that relationship to food, which stems from, cultural connectivity to, traditional knowledge to, eco intelligence. That's what we're doing, and collectively with all the partnerships at the table and those who want to support it, really, really show the support and rally and come and be present and or support it, because that is what we're leading as community innovators, as community change makers, as whatever we want to identify as just true leadership of being a good relative.
And I just want to add, I echo the sentiments of both Lori and Nick. And when I think about, Makbia Lutha and all the work that you're doing there and just really the opportunities, the work that you're doing for our children, our Wakayaja, so beautiful. And it's very, very powerful to see our youth so connected to the language, to see them know the songs, the ceremonies, all of those things. And I mean, they're the future for us. And so with that, there's a lot of opportunities surrounding just empowering and lifting the youth up and working together, collaborating together and sharing that. I know there's a lot of programming such as language and those types of things, but I feel like there's more opportunity that could take place. Just really, again, empowering our youth. That was one thing I always remember whenever I was younger. I always felt like, they don't listen to us, tribal council. And I'm from a different tribe, but I always felt like I never had a voice. And to see these children have a voice and be empowered, it is so beautiful. And that's the thing that gives me hope. That's what drives me. They give me hope. And so I always hear that from our elders. They said, I see what's going on with our young people, and it gives me hope. And so.
Pathways to Partnership, Uniting Native Communities and Philanthropy Gathering is Wednesday, October 16th at the Journey Museum in Rapid City. It's from 9 a.m. to 12:30 Mountain Time, and the public is welcome to attend. The event is sponsored by Porticus in North America. Tashina Wambliwi officially closes today's show.
Tunkashila Wakantanka Ambetu Washde Wan Uyakupi Cha Wopila Tanka Achichi Ekushto Tunkashila Mitakuye King Awa Wichayanka Ye Hachel Tanya Unipikte Mitakuye Oyasin.